On April 29th, 1992, a jury in a Simi Valley courtroom acquitted four Los Angeles police officers of the brutal beating of motorist Rodney King.
We, the jury, in the above-entitled action, find the defendant, Stacy C. Coon, not guilty.
That decision would ignite six of the most explosive days in Los Angeles history.
37 people dead, more than 1,300 injured, more than 4,000 arrested. Damage estimate, $200 million and rising.
Radio Free 102.3 KJLH remembers the civil unrest of 1992. And throughout all the chaos, we were there.
Please stay out of the streets
and keep you updated on what's going on around you so you don't need to go out in the streets.
We'll let you know.
Tune in to KJLH all week, April 30th through May 4th, as Carl Nelson returns to the front page, 4:30 to 6 a.m., to join with Dominique DePrima for the 20th anniversary of the front page and the civil unrest.
And to this gentleman, I'll call him, that says there's a revolution happening. A revolution happens if we're fighting the enemy. We're out there tonight fighting each other.
Right here on Radio Free 102.3 KJLH.
The original Communiversity. This is the front page on Radio Free 102.3 KJLH.
Yeah. The worst come to worst, my peoples come first. So if you ain't busting down, please disperse. Please disperse. Please disperse. I knew I never should have bought that teaser purse. Come the worst come to worst, my peoples come first. So if you ain't busting down, please disperse. Please disperse. Please disperse. Please disperse. Please disperse.
But in studio right now, we have someone, actually a couple people, one we've had in before, one not so much. Kevon Gully is the author of a book called Just Like Compton. It's a fictional novel based on true events. Of course, the names have been changed. The book is called Just Like Compton. He completed in 93 days. He was released from Kern Valley State Prison after serving most of an 8-year sentence for fraud and receiving stolen property. But while he was in jail with his fellow blockmates' assistance, he managed to complete this novel, actually trading his magazines for writing paper. Now he's got a new edition of it. It's called the Academic Edition, which is a good thing. And the person who helped him with that Academic Edition, he's a teacher of political science and sociology at El Camino College, Compton Center, also lectures at Loyola Marymount in African American Studies. He's from Tanzania, though born in the USA. He's a citizen of Tanzania. He's also CEO and festival director of the Zanzibar Film Festival. Dr. Ikoweba Bunting and Kevon Gully, welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to get all the way up on that microphone as if you were a rapper. So, Kevon, this book is really about more or less your life. I mean, it's really about, you went to Centennial High, you're from Compton. It's really about your life, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 80%
true.
80% true. It's about 80% true.
But, of course, you'll never tell which percentage is not true.
No.
The book has done really well, though. I mean, it got a big response when you were on the show last time. And this is your first time writing a book. So it was not really formatted like a traditional book. Dr. Bunting, how did it come to your attention? How did you get involved?
Thank you very much, Dominique. Kevon brought it to me on campus. One of my colleague instructors sent him to me. He had approached her about using the book in the class, and then she sent him to me. I gave the book a read. At first, I was a little hesitant. I couldn't figure out how I could use it in the class, but after Kevon and I discussed it, we thought we could use it in one of my classes, sociology of social problems. And we worked with changing some things in terms of its not the content of the story, but just some of the scenes so they could fit into the academic format.
So you kind of acted almost as an editor on the project.
Not really. As a matter of fact, I made a point of not interfering with any of his type of ideas or artistic his artistic originality or legitimacy in that way. What I did was just, there were just a few scenes that would be difficult to use in a classroom that were in, he has another version that he calls the hot version, where that would be more appropriate. They're more like the urban novel. So we modified some of those scenes, some of the more explicit sexual scenes in it.
Yeah, we made it academic friendly.
Well, you also gave it chapters, punctuation. It's not in all caps. I mean, to me, I read a lot of books. I come from a family of writers. I would like to read more books. If I had a babysitter, I'd read even more books. But, and now it looks more like a mainstream.
It looks like a book.
Yeah.
You can say that.
Yeah.
It's been professionally edited.
Was that a painful process for you?
No.
I mean, coming from, trading paper for magazines and doing whatever you wanted to, kind of making it fit into what's expected in the book world.
No, because I'm always willing to learn and adjust. So it wasn't that hard. I mean, it's kind of hard when people critique your baby, but, you have to sometimes accept that, And it was for the better because now the book's evolved into, Lord, we're doing so many things with the book, it's ridiculous.
So, and one of those things is you're using it in your classroom.
Yes, I am. In social problems, we have, like learning objectives. And one of the learning objectives we have for this class is students are presented with a scenario, and then they're supposed to be able to make an analysis of that scenario using the basic sociological theories. And in the back of this edition of Kevon's book, there's a color-coded matrix that has the different types of social problems that are
that
illustrated
in the book.
And then using that, students are able to pick out scenes and then make their analysis. The other thing that's really very good is many of our students have never read a book cover to cover. And
They're in college and they've never read a book cover to cover?
Well, it's community college. You have to understand, community college, the doors are open to everyone. And it's not just Compton. Americans don't read, as I'm sure you know. So we've been able to use this book and to get people to come to me and say, Dr. Bunting, this is the first book that I've read from cover to cover in my entire life. So there's benefit in more than one way that we're accomplishing from using this book.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, you must feel good about that, Kevon. I mean, getting people to read.
I do. I can't lie. I do. That's the biggest compliment I've received. I mean, the book has been made a L.A. County Library book. It's done all kind of big things since the last time I've seen you. But that was the biggest thing ever. And then I see the students on campus. Some of them are active gang members. Some of them are professionals. And they come up to me and the response is the same. Oh, man, the book was so great. I read it in one day. I read it in 2 days.
Well, it's been almost exactly 20 years since Los Angeles civil unrest took over the streets of L.A. And a lot of cities, by the way. I think it's really underplayed how much it took place in urban centers across the country. And, one of the things that I think is talked about less is what that meant, not in the official halls of courts and police institutions and political institutions and redevelopment agencies, but on the streets.
Right.
On the streets. Because this is one time when major change that happens politically also happens from the streets. And a lot of people would argue driven by the streets in many respects.
Absolutely true. I mean, some people just had enough. And then that's when unrest and revolution takes place, when people have said, that's it. I've had enough. Whatever the reason was to kick it off.
You're a pretty young guy. What were you doing in 1992?
In 92, I was probably in high school still.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not quite bad yet. I was a good kid.
Okay, so you didn't hit the streets, No.
No. I was in placement, so you couldn't really, you know, wear a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of tough.
All right. And I'm sure you know people who did.
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. So was I jumping up and down in my room, like, get them, get them, get them? Yeah, but I couldn't participate.
Mm-hmm. And where were you?
I was not in the country. I was in Tanzania at the time reading about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, is it cyclical? As you were speaking now, you said 20 years. The question comes up, is it every 20 years? Is it a 20-year cycle? Are we looking at something happening again?
Are you thinking 1965, 1992? That's almost 30 years.
1940s, hey, you know, how far do we need to go back?
As far as you can.
That's right.
You're the professor.
So that's the question. What, you know, these uprisings, huh? Are they gradual steps in a revolution, or are they just flashpoints in a pan, you know?
And what do you think?
Well, what do I think? I think they're flashpoints. But what do I hope? I hope that there's a revolution happening.
What do you mean when you say revolution?
Change, total change in the system, the economic system, the political system, social relations. Enough is enough.
Because I think revolution is one of those words like genius that just gets thrown around too much.
Okay, well, let me be more specific then. There's time to create a new society with different social relationships and different values. Humanity and life are valued beyond material and money. And I won't even use the word wealth. I mean money.
I think we're in the middle of it. I don't know that it's necessarily political. I think it can be.
Yeah, well, there's a political economy.
Of course, our consciousness affects our politics, but I'm just saying not necessarily driven by politics.
Oh, no.
I think it's driven by our humanity and by our common sense and by, you know, and by our changing consciousness. And then the politicians are the last to catch on.
Absolutely.
For the most part. I believe so.
I mean, it's like first, I mean, you have to become aware. Once you become aware, you become conscious. When you become conscious, then, you know, the ball starts rolling. I think that's my humble opinion.
Yeah. If you take Kevon's book, for example, in there is the process of the book and there's the process of his change that's happening. And then as he engages the academic institution and introduces his life into the academic institution, the fact that he's produced, edited, and published a book on his own. That's the type of total change we're talking about in him as an individual, and then he's making a social contribution by writing his story. Getting our students to look at these social problems that come out in the book, gang violence, relations between men and women, then they have to analyze it. Then you're getting a process of growth that happens, and then that'll make a qualitative change and give them the potential actually to change their environments, of all of us actually, as we engage in this project.
You know, to me, and again, this is my own take because you don't hear this so much in the mainstream media, but one of the themes that I see from 1992, now remember, I got to LA in 94, so I was dealing with the aftermath of 1992 uprising, and most of the aftermath that I was dealing with was what was going on the streets, because I worked for a radio station which no longer exists, and one of the first slogans they had, which I was like, okay, really, was true to the streets. So it was about getting out there and see what was going on, see how we could promote peace and promote change. I think one of the themes of 92 that I see is redemption.
Absolutely.
When you look at, you know, what happened in the neighborhoods, when you look at, you know, the dynamic between Bloods and Crips and whoever else was out there banging, when you look at even the story of someone like Atuki Williams, who, you know, ultimately ended up being executed, but not before he redeemed himself. This is one of the themes that I think, and even if you look at the story of Rodney King, you know, who has now gone into rehab and working with his own demons, as well as overcoming, you know, the anger that he felt. He has a book out as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Comes out the 24th.
I would raise a question, though, Dominique, about redemption in that way. Do victims need to redeem themselves, or does the system that victimized them need to redeem itself? When you say redemption, actually, what do we mean by that?
When I say redemption, I'm talking about remaking, healing, progressing. And I'm talking about, certainly Rodney King is a victim, but we want him to be a victor also. And in order to be a victor, you have to redeem yourself. I mean, not saying while you were, you have struggled your whole life. I started reading his book, so maybe that's why. Mm-hmm. But you've struggled your whole life with, alcohol, a family history of abuse. So when you're able to lift yourself out of that, you redeem yourself, you become a victor rather than a victim. That's my perspective. But that's not just an individual thing. That's a societal thing.
Yeah, I would agree. It has to be the society. I hear this word, the same thing, revolution, redemption, and these things, but have they become slogans where it keeps us from actually acting in a collective and organized way to look at the society that produces those conditions that takes you to the bottle or to the drugs. And by individualizing it and looking at the individual that overcomes it or makes that transformation and becomes a victor over those immediate individual problems, without the social context, does it perpetuate the system?
Well, yeah, now you're getting into a deep philosophical kind of
argument,
which is all good, I'm all for it. And by the way, we are taking your phone calls, 520-KGLH, 520-5554. What we control is ourselves. What we control ultimately is ourselves. And so to me, if we don't start with our personal redemption, then how useful are we to the greater society? And not to say you're not working all as an activist or changing your society all along the way. But I think what I hope and what I see, one of the big differences between change happening now and some change in some other periods, is that personal evolution is required. I don't think you can just...
It's in the book. I'm not the person I was when I was here a year ago. I've evolved. The redemption has started to take place.
And what about you personally? I mean,
that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about me.
So how does that manifest? What does it mean? Other than just, okay, he's got a book.
No, I mean, but I'm doing good in my neighborhood, though. That's the thing. I'm doing it. I'm out there in the streets. I'm not a paper tiger. I'm out there in the streets trying to promote peace and stop stuff from happening before it happens, because I know those people in the book. I can get in the middle of it and go, hey, let's talk about it.
Let's go to Nicole from L.A. Good morning, Nicole. You're on the front page. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Prima. And Mr. Kevon himself.
Hello.
And Mr. Bunting. Mr. Bunting, I know you from my Sociology 101 class. my name is Nicole.
Good morning, Nicole.
So good morning to all of you. My question, going back a little bit earlier in the show, Dr. Bunting, I heard you say that Kevon's book, you're using it, of course, and I heard you mention a revolution. A social change in society. So my question to the both of you young men is, do you think that the book itself, whether academically or streetwise, will become a part of this new change in society? Do you think it will open the eyes of what we would consider our people?
Dr. Bunting, you want to take that?
Yeah, as an instrument, as a tool to be used by students. The good thing about the book is that it resonates with who we are, where we live. There are incidents in it that we can all identify with. That's one of the reasons I selected it. And then once we're comfortable about reading about ourselves, reflecting on what's good and bad about ourselves, but locating it not in the, in an individual on the microscopic, but locating it in the macroscopic in terms of the system within which we live, the political system, the economic system, and then as an instrument of analysis. So we use that to, as a tool to approach the larger society. And in that way, once we begin reflecting on why these things are happening, both to us and by us, then we can begin to look at change and recreate a new world, a new place for us to live in and develop our full human potential. But without the reflection, without the analysis that happens, then we're spinning circles. We're going through cycles. 1965, 1992, we could look at uprisings that go back since the days of Denmark Vesey. But in Haiti, for example, they had a successful revolution.
You mean Haiti?
Yeah, and Haiti. That's say, how it's pronounced, Haiti.
Well, but it's nice if people understand what you're talking about. And when you say Denmark Vesey, explain who that is.
Denmark Vesey was an enslaved African that revolted, and it was a, what they call a slave revolt, where he tried to end chattel slavery in America.
So... And you, you know, you talk about reflection, the use of the book. I guess this book is now possibly going to be in other classrooms across the country.
Oh yeah, CSUN, Loyola Marymount. We're doing a high school edition, so we're Compton Unified School District's probably, there's a 90% chance that they're going to use it, and I've given it a larger redemptive value in the high school version.
Thank you, Nicole. Appreciate your call. Well, can you talk about, you know, we have to reflect first and then change, or we have to redeem ourselves and then change. Isn't it all kind of happening? Doesn't it happen all at once? Doesn't it have to happen all at once?
Well, we learn by doing. So if I'm working for change, I have to be engaged to be able to create that change. I can't just sit and passively reflect. So that reflective process is actually an engaged and active reflective process. It's we have our subjective and our objective realities. The objective reality, we could say, for example, if we take from the book, there are gangs on the streets of Los Angeles. That's the objective reality. But what those gangs mean, what they mean to the individuals who are members of it, and also what does it mean socially, that becomes a subjective aspect. So as we engage that, you're saying it's a learning process. We have to work towards change, and then we learn how to do it. But we can't make that lesson unless we think about and reflect on what we've been doing.
That's the same thing Dr. Janice Kinney-Neal said at Jackson State. They're going to use the book at Jackson State in Mississippi, and she said the same thing about the reflection and redemption. And at first I didn't understand it because I'm just trying to, you know, sell books. And then when it hit me, I was like, you know,
honesty,
what? That makes
on.
A lot of sense. You know, my friends know me. I'm not going to get on the radio and lie.
Well, but it's moved beyond that.
Oh,
for you,
way.
Hasn't it?
Yeah,
it
way
sounds like
that.
It. Just when I hear you talking about, you know, what you're doing, you personally are doing in your own neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's moved beyond selling books, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just lost a friend Saturday. You know, my friend Demondre Brown, Diamond, he just got killed Saturday. And that's ripped me in half with, where do I go now? Do I continue to do what I'm doing, or do I continue to do or think what I'm thinking?
What do you mean by that?
The old me wants to get off the shelf. And the man, because I've shed the N-word, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly
yeah,
what you mean.
Okay, well, I've shed that.
You put it on the shelf?
Now I'm the man. You know, now I'm Kevon Gully the man. And so it's hard for me, you know, when I know that a dear friend of mine was just killed over some stupidity.
And how do you regulate that?
I'm dealing with it day to day.
Yeah. Because I think with anything, that's a challenge, isn't it? When you change anything in your life, it's like...
It's hard.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, you could be giving up sugar just to take something trivial.
Right.
And cigarettes and certain things make you want to just go back, you know?
I know I'm being tested. You know, I'm not going to get all super political and religious, but I know I'm being tested. And, you know, I'm obsessed with winning, so...
What is that? What does winning look like?
Not getting off the shelf. Staying on the shelf and continuing on the path that I know is going to help other people. You know, I'm trying to stop the kids before they turn into, you know, who I was. That's my new goal. I've been endorsed by the Department of Probation, Department of Child and Social Services.
You never thought you'd see the day, huh?
No. When they write a blurb for the high school book, no, they wrote it.
Yeah.
You know, so things are evolving. So am I.
Professor Bunting, where are you going with this?
I would like to see Kevon step into the shoes of our next Jimmy Baldwin or Langston Hughes.
Those are really high aspirations for any writer.
That's right. He can write. Kevon can write. He's a good storyteller. He has the gift of the descriptive. And with his background and his intelligence, I think he can be a powerful force in the community for that change I was talking about. And if I can support that for my young brother and direct him in any way, that's where I want to go with it.
It's Radio Free 102.3 KGLH, Compton, Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Inglewood. Kevon, how can we find the book? How can we support you staying on the shelf?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, justlikecompton.com, all the local black bookstores, Esselon, Zara's. They've been selling the book in Sweden somewhere. Any textbook store, because now the book's a textbook, so you can go to any, it's a required textbook, so you can go to like Valero or textbooks.com and it's there. Yeah.
And get the marked up copies and get them on sale.
Yeah.
From last semester.
Somebody had dragged students selling them to each other. I want to give a shout out to Avi Bernard, who also is one of your guys. He's one of mine. He's on all the covers of the book.
Good guy.
Yeah, he's on all the covers.
I don't know about his modeling skills, but I'm just playing. Just like Compton.com.
Radio Free 102.3 appears on page 263. I don't know if he told you that, but, you know, KGLH is in the book.
You know. We are you.
Yes.
So we have to be in the book.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I represent those that knew me in the beginning when it was the red book that was in all caps and unedited. And you know,
I still have.
Okay.
Of course, that'll be a collector's item.
So, you know, I'm loyal to those that are loyal to me.
Well, congratulations on your journey.
Thank
I know
you.
We're just seeing the very beginning still. And Professor Bunting, thank you for coming in. For sharing with us.
Thank
I hope
you for
we'll get to talk
us.
To you again.
This is a great thing you're doing, and I appreciate it.
We will look forward to seeing what's next. The next book, the next
high school,
edition.
The high school book. It's coming. Mm-hmm.
And then the next book.
Yeah, that's right. You have to do the next book.
Yes.
Part two.
Once we get all the stuff. We got the movie going, so it's all type of stuff coming.
Well, Kevon, Gully, and Professor Bunting, thank you so much for joining us this
thank
morning.
Thank you for having me.
Blessings.
Be well. It's the front page. It's Radio Free 102.3 KJLH. Somebody by my side. I turn my head to the west. Still nobody inside. So I turn my head to the north. Swallow that pill that they call pride. That old thing's dead and gone. But that movie will be alright. I turn my head to the east. I don't see nobody by my side. I turn my head to the west. Still nobody inside. So I turn my head to the north. Swallow that pill that